Berkshire County District Attorney Andrea Harrington has joined with two other Massachusetts DAs to call on state legislators to raise the maximum age for people in the juvenile justice system from 18 to 21. In neighboring Vermont, youthful offender status has already been raised to 21 by a 2016 law that went into effect last year. Harrington, who won office in 2018 on a reform platform, sat down with WAMC to explain why she believes young adults are poorly served by the adult justice system. She also discussed the progress made by the task force she convened in April to confront what she described as the, quote, epidemic of sexual assault and domestic violence in the community.
So we're spending the most on this age group in the criminal justice system, but we are getting the worst outcomes. So young adults spend more time incarcerated in the houses of correction than any other age group, yet they have the highest recidivism rate in the adult system. Data shows that most young people age out of criminal activity by their late 20s, particularly with developmentally appropriate interventions, and exposing teens and young adults to adult jails and prisons actually increases their risk of reoffending.
So tell me a little bit about what you've seen in Vermont that's made you want to join the process of making that happen here in Massachusetts as well.
Well, I attended a program at the Columbia School of Social Work, and there were people from Vermont who were presenting on their process of raising the age. They talked about the strategy and the process with how the legislation worked in the state. But, you know, there's a lot of data and a lot of research from across the country and from that is also Massachusetts specific that demonstrates that this is the 18 to 25 year olds. It's called emerging adults it's a high need group and they're not being well served by the criminal adult system. We know that they are incarcerated at much higher rates. We know that they have much higher rates of recidivism, but we also know that because of their developmental stage in life, that it's a great opportunity with the right kind of interventions to get these young people on the right track and to, you know, keep them out of the adult system is going to help do that, because we also know that once these young people are exposed to the criminal justice system and exposed to jails and to prisons, that they're, you know, more likely to reoffend.
What DAs and other elected officials in Massachusetts are also behind this push?
It was we had a very strong contingency from Massachusetts at this particular conference. Anthony Benedetti, who is the head of the Public Defender Service for the state of Massachusetts, was present. He presented Sheriff Tompkins from Suffolk County. He's the Suffolk County Sheriff. He also presented, he talked about special programming that they have in his county, in his jails for what's called emerging adults. I was there. DA Dave Sullivan from Northwest District Attorney's Office was there. Paula Carey, who is the chief judge of the trial court, was there. So we had a really strong showing. Right now, there is some discussion about, you know, what is the best strategy in addressing the needs of emerging adults in Massachusetts. Other communities have implemented something called emerging adult courts, which would be similar to a drug court, but it would be a court within the adult system, within district court, that specifically is designed to address the needs of this particular age group. There were presenters from Brooklyn, from San Francisco, who talked about their emerging adult courts and how they worked. I personally think that for our community and for our needs, that raising the age of juvenile jurisdiction at this point to 21, it's just more feasible than starting a whole new emerging adult court.
So substantively, what would the major impact be on defendants should Massachusetts change its juvenile age distinction?
Well, their cases would be tried in juvenile court. They would be prosecuted in juvenile court, except for murder and for really serious offenses, we could they could still be considered youthful offenders. So there could be elements of adult court. They could potentially go to an adult correctional facility if they were youthful offenders. But it would protect people from generating adult records, I think, which is really important, because when you talk about this age group, you know, they're young and they're developing as adults, and we want young people to be able to go on and to work and to be able to care for their families and contribute to our community. And people are really hampered by having criminal records, so they would not have criminal records. And really, in the juvenile court, there's just more opportunity for interventions like mental health care, substance abuse treatment. It's more of a rehabilitative approach than what we see in adult court. In juvenile court, there's more involvement of families and other adults in a young person's life, which I do feel very strongly is appropriate for 18 to 21-year-olds. People who are parents can tell you that, you know, this age group are still really immature. They're impulsive. They need a lot of support. The federal government has raised the age to 21 of, you know, who gets support for in terms of like for like DCF. So support for DCF goes up to the age of 21 because there's a recognition that that group still needs a lot of help and support. So for these young people to be in juvenile court, it's just a much better way to provide a more tailored and individual rehabilitation plan than in adult court. And here locally, from what I can see, what's going on in our courts, our juvenile court has more of the resources available to provide that kind of support for 18 to 21-year-olds. Our district court is completely overloaded. Our probation officers there, they're stretched. Whereas in juvenile court, we are starting, since criminal justice reform took effect, more cases are being diverted out of juvenile court. So there's just more of a capacity for the court to address the needs of 18 to 21-year-olds than there is in district court. Even if we started an emerging adult court, you know, that takes a lot of resources, which basically we don't have.
Do you have any sense of how many people in the Berkshires would be affected by this change?
Well, right now we're relying on statewide data. I don't have data broken out for Berkshire County, not to say that it's not something that we could obtain. You know, data within, you know, the criminal justice system is it's a huge challenge for us. I think it's really important because it's important to you know, implement programming that is going to be effective, to know obviously how it's, you know, been affecting people in the past. So, but collecting data is an ongoing struggle. But the statewide data really clearly indicates that the national trends exist here in Massachusetts in terms of the incarceration rates for young people, recidivism rates for young people, how well interventions work. We also see really strong data that shows that African Americans are way, way, way overrepresented in terms of this emerging adult group in houses of correction and state prison.
Have you reached out to any community partners to sort of build a local consensus around this issue? And do you have a sense that it's important to people here in the Berkshires?
Yes. So right now, juvenile justice is a big focus of mine and a big focus of my office in terms of developing office-wide policies, building support in the community. So we are working on our juvenile diversion program. We are talking to community members about that piece. We've been talking, I think, a lot to a lot of people on the statewide level about what best practices are. So we've been talking with the Department of Youth Services, the Office of the Child Advocate, in determining, you know, best practices, what's worked well in other communities that we want to bring here to Berkshire County. And we, you know, we're working on building consensus and support around what's going to work best here. We've been talking with our law enforcement partners. We've been talking with the community organizations that provide the services to our young people and building those relationships and finding out, you know, what do they think is going to be the most effective way to address the needs of young people here in Berkshire County. We've been talking with Jennifer Kimball from Berkshire Regional Planning, Christine McBeth and Dr. Michaels from the Breen Center. We've talked with Berkshire Health Systems about how we can strengthen supports and build capacity to provide particularly more mental health services, more substance use services for young people and for, you know, really for everybody in Berkshire County.
As far as a timeline on a juvenile diversion program, when do you think you'll be able to bring a model forward to the community?
Yeah, so we have started the, we are diverting cases according to our diversion program. And our intention is, you know, over the course of the summer to present more of a detailed plan to the community. So, you know, I expect that to kind of look like an outline as to this is what we're doing that we'll present to the media, that we'll put on our website, that we'll put on social media, and, you know, really going out and talking to community groups and talking to people and explaining this is how our this is our approach to juvenile justice. A lot of our attention at this point is focused on like the schools. We've met with the superintendents and are in conversation with them and with law enforcement. But definitely over the course of the summer, this is a big focus of mine.
Turning to the Sexual Assault and Domestic Violence Task Force you launched in April, I'm interested in what updates there are from that group. What steps have you taken since coming together earlier this year?
So we had a very productive meeting on Monday morning. It was a full meeting. We had great participation. Mayor Bernard from North Adams was there. Senator Hines was there. We had representation from the schools, from community groups, representation from my office. And we have set, we basically settled on a mission statement. We settled on value statements. We talked about what our subcommittees are going to be, what the process like that is going to look like, having chairs. And we want to be filling out those subcommittees with more members of the community so that we can make them really robust and so that they're like really, really doing work on specific projects. I think one of our first goals is to do like a process of mapping, which we started, which is identifying our resources that we have available and looking at gaps will be our next step.
When you first announced the task force, you also talked about bringing new resources to bear in the fight against sexual assault and domestic violence, including new trainings for local law enforcement. When can we expect to see those resources, including those trainings, start to roll out around the county?
For the role of my office on the task force, in addition to doing the work around planning and organization, you know, our piece is the accountability piece. And we are making plans now to provide training to local law enforcement, which is something that they've specifically asked for. So we're planning a sexual assault investigation training that will happen in September. And that will be, you know, MPTC certified training credits for officers who need to have those credits every year. And we also are working on building better communications between my office and local law enforcement so that we are hearing from them. We have an ADA that's on call. We have a victim advocate that's on call. We want to hear from local officers as soon as they receive a complaint of sexual assault so that we can, you know, make contact with the victim so that they feel supported throughout the process so that they know what kind of services are available. We want to make sure that our ADA is in contact with the investigators to help just make sure that the investigation is done properly. You know, I think that it's important for victims to be be treated as such, and not to be, you know, I'm not saying that there's, I'm not calling anybody out specifically, but certainly there can be a history of sort of blaming the victim, and that's been part of our culture. So we are looking for very concrete ways to combat that, and we see having a strong presence from an ADA at the beginning of a case as being the best way to combat that. We're also working on bringing training for medical personnel in particular about recognizing the signs that somebody is a victim of human trafficking. And other pieces that, that we're working on in terms of accountability are having our own, developing our own internal office policies about pursuing particularly cases of domestic violence, and what are our policies going to be around prosecuting cases where we don't have victims that are cooperative, and what is a fair and just way to approach those cases. So we're working on an internal plan to create our own policies around those kinds of issues.
You talked about filling out the task force with a more robust community presence. In your mind, what goes into picking out the right people to be on the task force from the community?
We will be setting up a membership committee who will develop clear policies and guidelines around how people join the task force and participate in the task force. You know, I think that it's just people who, we've had a really strong response. People want to be involved. People want to be engaged with our work. And so one of the challenges of my office is finding ways for people to do that. So we really are looking for meaningful ways to plug people in so that they can participate. And, you know, that's our perspective, like looking for ways to help, to get people to be able to help and to contribute meaningfully.
Something else you talked about during your campaign was reopening sexual assault cases from the last 15 years in Berkshire County. Are there any updates on progress made towards that end, or any chance of relitigation of past crimes?
Yeah, so we, in looking at some of the past cases, you know, we decided that the number one priority existed around doing training, working with our local law enforcement partners in terms of how the investigations, what an ideal investigation looks like. We are, you know, there's a backlog right now in processing sexual assault rape kits. And so we've been, all of the DAs have been in communication with EOPS, which is like the Executive Office of Public Safety. And that's the body that is responsible for ensuring that the kits are tested. We've been working with them about a time frame for testing outstanding kits. We have inquired with the with the State Police Crime Lab as to, we've requested a list of all of the kits that they have in their possession, tested or untested, and it's a process of comparing that list and gathering files from local law enforcement. It's a big job. My hope was that we would be able to line up interns through some of the local colleges that could help us with that task. It's just really for us been a matter of capacity in getting that work done. We have a lot of projects that we're working on, and that's in the mix. And I could also potentially see our task force as being a helpful vehicle for helping us to work on that project.
When we last spoke, you talked about the challenges of internally organizing the office to be able to meet these initiatives that you've talked about for so long now. What progress have you made on that front?
This office processes around 7,000 cases a year. Right now, we do have a certain amount of backlog of cases, and that's particularly noticeable in Superior Court, where you know, we have some cases that are 3 and 4 years old. And we're working really hard to do our part so that when, you know, the ADAs are show up for the call of the list, they're ready for trial. And that's what we're doing. We are working really hard on that piece. You know, there's also other kind of pieces that affect the entire office, like technology. We're working on updating our technology. I really need to hire, some more prosecutors, which we're working on, you know, attracting talent to Berkshire County. It's a challenge because we're a little bit far flung. So we're, you know, always on the look for good people. We're working hard to find a Spanish-speaking person that we can train to be a forensic interviewer. It's a big need in the office. We've been looking for months. There's those kinds of things that are just ongoing. And then, like, you know, we had that audit that was done by the state auditor. You were here for that, like, our internal control policy. We're working on developing that. We're working on developing an employee handbook. We're working on developing best policies and practices around, you know, grand jury charges and, you know, when we request bail and sentencing recommendations. There's a lot. There's no shortage of work to do, but it's we're definitely making progress. But we need. I feel like we're the office is a little bit under-resourced. And a big part of my job is working to bring more resources. So we've applied for some federal grants. We're going to continue that. We're working on exploring other kinds of funding opportunities from private foundations. My director of community outreach started within the past few weeks. His name is Brian House. So he's working on, you know, developing more relationships in the community. I want to do some listening sessions out in the community. I haven't done that formally yet because I just haven't had anybody to organize those. So my hope is that, you know, over the course of the summer, we'll be able to get that off the ground.